suburbs, the home they've always dreamed of, the happiest investment they have ever made. Distinctive architectural details create a lovely setting that enhance the pleasure of entertaining. This is how American families are living in their new home.
In the heart of the idyllic yet fictional suburbia of Evergreen Meadows, where white picket fences line the streets, perfectly manicured lawns stretch for miles, there lurks some dark secrets that whisper through the shadows of every cul-de-sac. From the outside, all the houses appeared like all of the others, freshly painted exterior, blooming flower beds, yet within the confines of those walls, there are dark stories unfolding. There is a deeper reality that exposes the hidden truths that lay beneath suburbia's picture-perfect facade. Welcome to The Sins of Suburbia. Throughout this sermon series, we'll uncover some of the more hidden sins that plague so many of us. These hidden struggles might not make any top 10 sin lists, but they're no less dangerous. And so for the next 5 weeks, we're going to take some evening walks together through the fictional sidewalks of Evergreen Meadows. And on our walks through suburbia, we might see some peculiar occurrences. Strange noises echoed from our neighbor's basement at odd hours. We might hear the whispers of peculiar behavior through the neighborhood gossip grapevine. And together, we'll discover the sins of suburbia. Are you ready? Leaders are readers. You've heard that before. And I read recently something, and I just felt like I should pass it along to you guys. Justin Timberlake and Jessica Biel are in trouble. The celebrity couple apparently sold some of their properties that they own together and perhaps getting ready for an amicable split. One insider says that Britney Spears' memoir that was released last year revealed some troubling behavior patterns of young Justin when they were dating. Another source says that this has been the cause of much of the couple's conflict. And then get this, on page 62 of the same magazine, I read that Odell Beckham Jr. and Kim Kardashian split up. Rumor has it that they had been seeing each other and things were getting pretty serious. In February, a friend of theirs told OK Magazine that they were, quote unquote, falling for each other. An insider says that the breakup stemmed from Kim saying, "I want children with Odell because of his genes." Well, this totally freaked him out because they weren't dating all that long, right? And she's talking about having children? Oh, no, girl. No. Red flag. In our evening walk through Evergreen Meadows, we hear the neighborhood chatter, and we can't resist taking part in some juicy gossip. Proverbs 18:8, the words of a gossip are like choice morsels. They go down to the inmost parts. The words of a gossip are like choice morsels. In other words, the words of a gossip are like these. Okay. Milk duds. Have you ever had these before? They're unbelievable. Okay. They're chocolatey, they're caramely, together all in one bite. And this is what Solomon compares to gossip. And I think the Bible is onto something, considering another article that I read this week, right? Leaders are readers. And this is from Social Neuroscience Magazine. I usually read that after the celebrity gossip stuff. Scientists looked at brain imaging of people as they heard gossip. And the study found that the caudate nucleus, which is the reward center of our brain, was specifically activated in response to negative gossip. Subjects seemed to be amused or entertained by scandals. The caudate nucleus also lights up in response to things like romantic encounters or eating chocolate. Okay, that's science. The same part of our brain that is activated by chocolate is also activated by gossip. The words of a gossip are like choice morsels. They go down to the inmost parts. Those morsels. Okay, now there are at least five different types of gossip. Okay, there's chit-chat. This is the type that says, did you hear the Simmons are moving? And it's often basic information shared without harmful intent and often without harmful results. Okay, then there's prying. You know someone's going through a rough patch in their marriage. So you ask a close friend, hey, how's Blake and Ryan doing? Okay, you're prying, you want to know more. Then there's the prayer request, okay? This is where you pretend you're sharing something so the other person can pray for them, but really you just want to tell them something, okay? And it's often preceded with phrases like, bless her heart, as in, bless her heart, but Mary Beth has put on a little bit of weight lately. We need to pray for her. I don't know why I busted out the Southern accent there. Then there's the juice, okay? The juice, that kind of gossip, that's rare. This is when you hear something and it's so juicy that you immediately have to call your BFF and tell them what you just heard. The juice is usually preceded by phrases like OMG or you're never going to believe this. How many of you have been juicing this week? And then finally, there's the sandwich. And this one's pretty common, okay? You say something nice about somebody, then you say what you really want to say, and then you say something nice again about them, okay? This is a disguise technique that makes you sound nicer than you actually are. For example, in my own life, a lot of times people will ask me about another pastor in town, and I have been guilty of using the sandwich. I would say something like, oh, I really like him. You know, I met him one time. He seems like an amazing pastor, you know. I don't really love his theology. It doesn't really seem like he spends too much time, you know, loving his congregation, but he's an amazing pastor. Great church, great church. You see what I did there? I sandwiched it, so it's okay. No, it's not. Compliment, gossip, compliment. I do this, you do this. Hey, John, what do you think about so-and-so? Oh, man, she's really growing in her faith, becoming an awesome woman of God. You know, I don't really trust her. I wouldn't really let my kids around her. I don't really want to be in the same state as her, but she's amazing. She's amazing, okay? You can't do that. Now, I'm exaggerating here to make a point, but we need to be honest about the kinds of conversations we're having with one another. And the Bible actually speaks about gossip quite a bit. Proverbs 11:13. A gossip betrays a confidence, but a trustworthy person keeps a secret. Are you a trustworthy friend? Proverbs 16:28, a perverse person stirs up conflict and a gossip separates close friends. Has gossip ever severed friendships for you? Proverbs 20:19, a gossip betrays a confidence, so avoid anyone who talks too much. Avoid anyone who talks too much? Some of you are thinking of people right now that you need to start avoiding. Proverbs 26:20. Without wood, a fire goes out. Without a gossip, a quarrel dies down. Conflicts die down when you don't keep talking about it with other people. There are a number of different words used in the Bible to describe gossip or slander. And these Greek and Hebrew words help paint a full picture of what gossip really is and what gossip really does. And one of the words that the Bible uses means one who reveals secrets. Okay, one who has taken privileged information and passes it on to someone else. Another one of the words means a whisperer. It's a picture of whispering into someone's ear. Another one of the words the Bible uses to describe gossip is the word to bubble up. And the word picture is the words bubbling up out of our mouths, even though we're not even thinking about it. We just can't help ourselves. Just letting things come straight out. No filter. Picture pouring soda and the bubbles kind of continuing to go up, up, up and over and spilling out. Jesus says that out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. And this is why gossip is a heart issue. What's in here always comes out here. This week I saw some interviews where people were asked, why do you think you gossip? Like when you gossip, why do you think that you do it? And some of the answers were revealing. Someone said, "If I'm being honest, sharing gossip makes me feel kind of important. Like I've got the power of the situation, and all of a sudden, I feel like I'm above everyone else." Another said, "When I'm hearing gossip, it makes me feel better about myself. Because there's something great when someone else looks bad. It makes me feel better." And finally, someone said, "Honestly, I feel like I have such a boring and dull life that hearing something juicy about someone else is very entertaining." It's entertainment. Every reason that was given, there wasn't one good reason to gossip. Not one. When you look at the reasons, it's really a more accurate reflection of the darkness within you and the darkness within me. When it comes to the way we use our words, there's no better section in the scriptures than James chapter 3. He uses illustration after illustration to put word pictures to what he is trying to say. And what he is saying is, what we say matters. Always. First, he uses horses as an example. Verse 3, "When we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal." Okay, horses weigh between 1,000 and 2,200 pounds, and they are strong. You can see one horse versus 18 men in tug of war, and it's not even close. Yet a horse can be controlled and moved by one tiny piece of metal called a bit. So it is with our words. James continues, or take ships as an example. "Although they are so large and driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go." Ships cross over seas and oceans. They navigate the wind and the waves. For centuries, they have carried people and cargo across the most violent seas and unexpected storms. Yet, these ships can be controlled and moved by one little part called the rudder. So it is with our words. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue also is a fire. One tiny little match can produce this. So it is with our words. Verse 7. "All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and sea creatures are being tamed and have been tamed by mankind. But no human being can tame the tongue." Humans have tamed snakes, elephants, camels, horses, lions. We have tamed all kinds of animals, powerful, wild animals. But we haven't tamed the tongue. James says it is a restless evil full of deadly poison. It's like poison. The word in Greek here is literally snake venom. Just a few drops can kill. You can assassinate somebody with your words. You can assassinate their character. The tongue is a deadly weapon. "Whoever said sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me," lied. And then the rest of this passage, it really gets to the heart of the matter. James closes us out. "With the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this should not be." This should not be. The great mathematician and philosopher Blaise Pascal said, "I maintain that if everyone knew what others said about him, there would not be four friends in the world." As we walk together throughout the sidewalks of this fictional suburbia called Evergreen Meadows, as we walk by these homes, oh, if we heard the words spoken behind these walls. Our kids are really into Would You Rather lately. Okay, Dex got a Would You Rather book for Easter. And when we're driving somewhere, he'll just ask a random question. Like, "Would you rather live your life in the pouch of a kangaroo or have a pouch on your stomach where a baby kangaroo lives?" And some of them, they kind of stop you in your tracks. And many times in his would you rather questions, a question comes up about which superpower we'd rather have. And when the question is, would you rather be able to read minds, or it's always the other option. Because reading minds would be a curse, not a blessing. Blaise Pascal's quote again. I maintain that if everyone knew what others said about him, there would not be four friends in the world. He said that in the 1600s. And he's probably right. I think what it comes down to is this. We talk negatively about others when they're not around because we just don't think it's a big deal. Now, I love my kids. I'm very protective of my kids. And if I ever hear someone or heard someone saying something bad or negative about Dex or Ivy, that would crush me. I would be so deeply hurt by that. It would hurt me. It would affect me. It wasn't said about me, but it would hurt me and it would affect me. Nobody talks like that about my kids. That's my daughter. That's my son. And even if there was a grain of truth to what was said, I'd chime in. You don't know them like I know them. So just stop, okay? You sound stupid. You're stupid. That's what I would think. How many times a week, how many times a day do we say the same thing about one of God's sons or daughters? And God is up there being wounded by our words because that's his daughter. Because that's his son. And you don't know them like he knows them. And you're not just hurting them. You're hurting God. Ephesians 4, verse 29. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. And do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God. Get rid of all bitterness and slander. Be kind and compassionate to one another. I think it's fair to say that gossip is something this whole suburban neighborhood struggles with. And most of us know that it is so very difficult to remove something from our lives that has kind of become part of our lives. And the key is to remove and replace. You see, if you just try and remove something negative from your life, and you don't replace that negative with something positive, the removal is unlikely to last. You know this to be true. How many times have we said, I'm gonna give up junk food, but we don't replace it with having a more balanced diet, and eventually we just go right back. And if you want to remove the negativity that gossip causes and the negativity that gossip reveals, we must remove and replace. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths. Okay, that's remove. Remove the unwholesome talk. But only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. That's replace. Remove, replace. May I suggest to you a filter? Before you say anything, think. Ask, is it true? Is it honest? Is it inspiring? Is it necessary? Is it kind? Think. Is it true? Is it honest? Is it inspiring? Is it necessary? Is it kind? I read a story this week about Ken Blanchard and Barbara Glanz. They travel the country doing business training all over America. They have trained thousands of frontline workers at grocery stores, at retail outlets across the country. And they talked about the power of words and how what you say really does make a difference in people's lives. And after one of these specific trainings, Barbara gets a call from a guy named Johnny, who is at one of the trainings. And Johnny told her very early on, I'm 19 years old, I have Down syndrome, and I work as a bagger at a grocery store. He said, I liked your talk, but I didn't know what to do with it. I went home and talked with my dad, and I got an idea. My dad and I sat down at a computer every day and we come up with a statement that is affirming to people, that's encouraging. If I can't find one in a little quote book, I'll make one up. And we'll type it up 6 different times on the computer. And I'll print 50 sheets. And all of them are on it. And so he has 300 of these quotes. Then every night, Johnny signs each one of them personally. Then the next day at the grocery store, he puts his stack of 300 notes right by where he bags all the groceries. And he gets everyone's groceries all bagged up. And then on the last sack, he puts the quote of the day, the encouraging word, in the bag. And he makes sure he looks them in the eye and he says, I put something very special for you in this bag. I hope it will brighten your day. Then he'll walk them out to the car and help them load up. Johnny does this to every single person, every single day. The business consultant, Barbara, said after a month after she got this phone call, she got another phone call, this time from the manager of Johnny's grocery store. And he said, Barbara, I can't believe it. Something really amazing is beginning to happen. I was walking around the store and I noticed while we had lots of checkers at the checkout line, there was no one there but maybe one or two people. The line where Johnny was doing his bagging went all the way to the back of the frozen food section. True story. He said, I would tell them over the intercom that there were other lines that you could move over to. And we would walk down the line and tell people that there were other lines open. And people would just look at us and say, no, we'll wait here because we want Johnny's encouraging word of the day. One woman came by and grabbed the supervisor. She said, I used to only come to the grocery store once a week. Or once every other week. Now I come almost every day. I buy something just so I can get Johnny's encouraging word for the day. A month later, the store manager continued. Said it's changing our entire culture. Even in the flower department, when a flower was broken, they used to just throw it away. Now they walk out into the lines on their own initiative. They pin it to elderly women and young girls to brighten their day. It's amazing. If it can happen at a grocery store, it can happen in a church. If it can happen in a grocery store, it can happen in our own suburban communities. This should be a place where we speak words of life to one another. We remove and replace in our lives, in our homes, in our suburbs, might get a little bit brighter. Lord, help us to remove and to replace and to speak words of life that build others up. God, I pray that we would benefit and bless others by the words that we say when they're in front of us and when they're not. Help us to be great encouragers to those around us in our homes, in our places of work, in our church, and in our suburbs. In Jesus' name. We want to thank you so much for joining us for week one of The Sins of Suburbia. We can't wait for week two, our second stroll through an evening walk through the fictional sidewalks of Evergreen Meadows. We can't wait. We'll see you there. Grace and peace.